I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Red Room.
Be a rider, well you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminished and the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed. In the rent room, we let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want.
Welcome to the Red Room.
Ah, yeah. What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest. And you guys are listening to the Screenwriters Rant Room, where we keep it street, we keep it opinionated, and we keep it what?
2015.
How come I don't hear you say that?
I was taking a I was like debating.
I'm about to
somebody. I was putting my phone aside, and I was debating, do I have time to get one more shit?
I'm about to spit your wig up in here.
You know what? I'm here.
Every fucking week, Carlito. You have no idea.
Why
do you do the drama all the time?
It's been like a year and a half, Carlito. A year and a half. This bitch right here. Let me tell you.
Wow. I see.
I was debating, like, do I have time in between to grab one more Dorito chip?
Anywho.
But I do not. Yes, it is I. I'm here. Hello.
So.
How's it going?
It's your boy, Hilliard Guest. You guys are listening to The Rant Room. So, on the show, we discuss entertainment, TV, film, music, culture, but our focus is always screenwriting, stories, craft, and shit like that. Mm-hmm. So y'all hear her, Little Miss Late, Lisa Bolakaja.
That's right.
We call her the street nerdist, Carlito. Mm-hmm. Why we call you that?
Well, because being the
street
nerdist.
He's looking at you like you short. You
the street nerdist is this, because in certain situations, I can get real gully with it, you know, but when I need to, I will bring the academic side. I will hook
Jekyll
you up.
Jekyll and Hyde cousin. See, that's
I will
what she
like
is.
Bring it to you any way you want it.
Mm-hmm.
Any way you want it.
Mm-hmm.
That's dope.
That's why.
By the way, Carlito, your girl over here, her feet was just moving like this to the beat of my song
right there, my theme
song. That's all you.
Yeah, that song is hot. We need to talk about that song.
That's not bad, that
song,
huh?
Nah, that song is
kind of makes you go like this.
That's a rap about writing.
See?
Exactly.
See?
See? That's what y'all need on Empire. Y'all need some real shit.
I know.
And when you also seen Carlito's face, because he was like, is he writing?
We're not talking about the club. We don't always got to talk about the club and Cristal and everything else. Sometimes it could be about screenwriting.
It can be about
writing people.
That's my boy Jack Spade. He's a rapper out there from Atlanta.
That's right.
Anyway, so fuck it. Y'all know how we do it on the
right.
We also got my man Kevin Killebrew sitting in with us again.
Hello, audience.
Kevin's a big voiceover artist. He does all kind of shit. So you've heard him all over the time,
absolutely,
all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And so, look, if you guys are grown, let's go ahead and get in.
Mm-hmm.
So today, guys, we got a kick ass. That was tight, wasn't it? He's like, oh, he got bars. Look at him.
What is this kind of
problem? Exactly. I told you, we silly.
I apologize ahead of time, Kurt.
Right, it's all good.
We try to be in our best behavior.
Exactly.
We actually do have class. Just want you to know that.
We got to do a cross collabo with Combat Jack.
All right.
Get that going on.
All right.
Screenwriter.
Let's get it. So we got my man, Carlito Machete here, you guys. Writer. You producer now? Producer? We call you producer?
Yeah, I produced a bunch of stuff for BET and
Definitely.
TV and those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Former music editor, all kind of shit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
My man has done a lot. So you guys know him. You guys heard him. Pimp Dog himself. Carlito Machete, y'all.
But the awesome last name.
Doesn't it?
Like, so you say Machete, he's like, I just want to wreck shit now. It's like,
how you say it in Spanish? How you say it?
Machete.
I'm fucking it up. Look,
no, it's all good. It's all
I love
good.
It.
Yeah, that's what's up. So, Carlito, let's tell the kids, like, where you from, how you got into the game, and let's hear the story. So, because you guys are going to learn a lot of cool shit. Carlito is currently a writer on Empire. Last season you were on The Leftovers. Mm-hmm. That fucking show right there. We really gonna go in on that. We gonna go in on it all.
Mm-hmm.
But so let's just tell the kids a little bit of your background.
Okay, so I'm originally from the Bronx. Oh, my
God. The Boogie Down Bronx.
Yeah. You hear that accent?
A no real doubt. Bronx person.
Let him talk.
Oh, okay? Damn it. When I hear the realness, I have to like pay respect.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, shut up.
I'm from the Bronx. Mm-hmm. I grew up, on the concourse, you know, shouts to the BX. Mm-hmm. And I gotta claim Miami and Philly because they were very like instrumental in me growing up.
Sure.
My mom's died when I was kind of young, and so I hopped around a lot between New York, Miami, and Philly.
I'm working on. Mm-hmm. I need some better Philly to talk
okay.
to.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so like I hopped around and out during my high school years, mm-hmm. and I had always been I'd always been like a closet nerd kind of kid, you know?
Mm-hmm. All of us.
Basically, you know? You grow up in a certain kind of time and place, and, you know, you don't necessarily have to be the super hard rock dude who's getting mm-hmm. in trouble with the teachers, mm-hmm. but you grow up in a certain environment, certain neighborhood, you got to fight. Like, if it comes your way, you can't just, mm-hmm. you can't be that guy who doesn't fight. It's just not a good look.
No. Mm-hmm.
So all that is to say that I was always really creative. I used to draw comics, and then I got into graffiti. Mm-hmm. I used to rap. I used to break a little bit.
Oh, wait. Did he say he used to rap?
Yeah, I
used to get busy.
Yeah. Graffiti like Fab Five Freddy.
Yeah, like, in the tunnels, breathing.
How you gonna say he rap? How you gonna say he rap and ain't gonna give us no bar?
I can give you one if you want.
Give us some.
I mean, you can we save it for later?
Yeah, I'll save it for later.
Don't forget. Yeah, don't forget though. Yeah, I can. At least I don't forget.
Best spit that rhyme.
I can. Yeah, I can. We can play around with that. Up to a second. So yeah. So like I hopped around a lot, and then I went to Philly to finish high school. Because mm-hmm. I was fucking up all over the place, and I went to Philly, mm-hmm. and when I was in Philly, I wound up staying there, like, you know, just for whatever like circumstances, I wound up staying in Philly mm-hmm. for about 5 years, and I got in some trouble, mm-hmm. and I went to prison for really? Like 5 years. Yeah, okay. I was in the feds for like 5 years, and when it was time to get out, it was time to come home. I decided I wanted to move back to New York just because. You know, New York for me had always been home. Right. As many ties as I have to Philly and mm-hmm. Miami. My pops been in Miami since the 70s. Mm-hmm. So I just went back to New York. And when I got back to New York, a couple of my friends had been making moves. Before I went to prison, two of my boys and I had started a comic strip. And we pitched it to the Source magazine when they were brand new. It was called View from the Underground. Yeah. And they bought it.
Yeah.
So, you know, we were doing that strip right as I was going into prison. Mm. So for the 5 years I was in, the 4.5 or whatever it was that I wound up serving off the 5, the comic strip had a little following, mm-hmm. but the Source went through this weird upheaval, and they changed like editorial leadership and mm-hmm. what have you, mm-hmm. and they discontinued the strip. So when I got out, I still had a couple of contacts at the right. Source, but not very many. Anyway, long story short, I met an intern there, my man Riggs Morales, who mm. nowadays is VP of A&R for Atlantic Records.
Yeah, okay.
But he was like a 17-year-old kid interning at the Source, Dominican, Puerto Rican kid from the Heights.
Hey, Dominicanos. Hello, people. Yeah.
Ya tú sabes. So, mm-hmm. so my man Riggs introduced me to Selwyn Hines, mm-hmm. who was the, at the time, Selwyn was the music editor. He was the music editor. Like, the reason I wanted to make the connect, honestly, is because I needed to make a little extra bread.
Mm-hmm.
I was just out of prison. I was going to college. And I said to Riggs, yo, introduce me to your music editor because I got to make some money. And I think, you know, I know this hip-hop shit. Like, this mm-hmm. is, I live it.
Right.
And, you know, I think I could write a little bit, maybe. And the reason I had the batteries in my back, the reason I had believed that I can write is because I had an English professor at Lehman College in the Bronx, Mr. Paris Condola. Shouts to him because mm-hmm. that's my man mm-hmm. to this day, mm-hmm. Leo Paris Condola. He used to make us keep a journal. This is English 102, I think it was. He used to make us keep a journal, right? And he was like, I'm not going to grade it, but I just mm-hmm. want to see your thought process.
Right.
And so as I'm turning in this journal every week or whatever, like 3-4 weeks in, he pulls me to the side and he says, Carlito, listen, I got a question. Do you consider yourself a writer? And I was like, nah, not really. Because to me, at the time, mm-hmm. to call yourself a writer was like a declaration. Like, mm-hmm. you got, I always say you got to throw this big ass W on your chest with a kid. You know what I'm saying? And declare to the world, right, yo, I'm right, a writer, yo. Right. And I didn't feel like I could measure up to that. You know, mm-hmm. there were writers in the Village Voice that I would look up to. Mm-hmm. At the time, the only writer at the Source that I dug was Selwyn, my boy Selwyn. Mm-hmm. I didn't know him, but like I dug his stuff. A couple other writers here and there. And I was like, I'm not that. I'm not that mm-hmm. person. So no, I don't consider myself a writer. And he said, well, you know what? You have a voice and it's unique and et cetera, et cetera. From this moment on, you should consider yourself a writer. Mm. So I went home that afternoon like, wow, okay, that's ill, mm-hmm. you know? Because I never wanted to admit to anybody, hey, secretly, I'm like writing stuff, right. y'all. Even though I had been emceeing for the better part of 10,
which
12
is a
years.
Writer anyway.
Right. You know what I'm saying?
But a lot of times, like you said, a lot of times we don't recognize
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I didn't recognize that. Right. I had been writing my own little comic book since I was like in the fourth or fifth grade. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I'm not thinking that's a
that's
discipline.
Your cousin out there.
Like writing.
Yeah. Same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like this light bulb, like, oh shit, mm-hmm. okay. So later on that night, I was hanging out with my boy Toxic, a legendary graffiti writer, my brother Toxic, and we're hanging out at some party at the Low East Side. It was like right around there where New Yorican Cafe is. Mm-hmm. And I'm fucking up, man, because I forget this gentleman's name, but we were in somebody's house, one of those old school, like basement level apartments in New York mm-hmm. that's like the entire, like the apartment is basically the run of the fucking building.
Yeah.
So,
right.
so it's like 18 rooms down right, there, and right. one room is crazy hot because it's next yeah. to the boiler, the other room is freezing cold. Mm-hmm. But we were hanging out with some people there, you know, and it was very like bohemian-ish, right. kind of like mm-hmm. like creative, mm-hmm. literary. Mm-hmm. And I'm having this conversation with this older gentleman, this brother. He was older, probably in his 60s at the time, and he was blind, right? Mm-hmm. And we're kicking it, and I'm fucking up because I forget his name, but he used to hang out with Last Poets. He used to hang out really? With Bill Scott Heron and those guys. You know, in the mm-hmm. 60s, mm-hmm. that was his crew. He was a writer as well, and I think a jazz musician.
Okay.
I'm an idiot. Somebody will listen to the podcast and be like,
yeah.
you're talking
yeah.
about so-and-so. He's a yeah. legend, like, right?
Right, right?
Anyway, the point is, when the night was over, we're all saying goodbye, whatever, and then the gentleman says to me, and remember, this is the same day mm-hmm. that afternoon that the professor was like, you should mm-hmm. consider yourself a writer. And as we're all saying bye, he goes, Carlito, it was really great to meet you, young brother, blah blah blah. He goes, listen, man, how long you been writing? And I was like, how did you know I was a writer? Mm-hmm. He was like, oh man, you sound like a writer, you talk like a writer, brother.
That
like
voice.
If you're not writing, yeah. you need to blah blah blah. And right. I was like, so I was on the subway going home that day, like. Like, whoa, what the fuck is going on? Like, I'm like, you know, like a little paranoid right. about, okay, so the universe is guiding me a certain way. And real talk, like after that, I just never looked back. Like, I was like, all right, fuck it. So there it is. There's the W
on
my
chest. Cake.
Yeah, let me do it. Let me do it.
Yeah.
And shortly after that is when I connected with Selwyn at the Source, and he gave me a couple of assignments. And then,
What type of stuff were you doing back then? Like what?
Back then it was just like music reviews, you mm-hmm. know? Like I was like, I know hip hop a little bit, you know, mm-hmm. I think I could write a little bit. Throw me some stuff to review.
How mm-hmm. many mics this one gets? Like, man, y'all was brutal back in the day.
It's well, you know, when you here's the thing with the Source. I mean, I don't know how they do it now, but back then it was like, if you're a freelancer, you're not gonna vote on the mics. Like that's just Mind Squad.
Yeah.
That's just the staff.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
And I think if I'm not mistaken, the very first thing I wrote for the Source was it was one of two things. It was either a review of a Wu-Tang single called Wu Wear. I'm aging myself, y'all. I was doing this when I was 12 years old.
He was young.
So it was either that or it was a single by this group out of LA, these Latino brothers, man. Mm. Damn, I forgot their name. But they had this dope ass song with like these trumpets in it. Mm. It was either one of those two. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I did that and it was cool. And then I just started getting more burn, more love. And it just so happens that at the time I was working at the American Red Cross, right on 66th and whatever in Amsterdam, right? On Amsterdam Ave. And I was working at the Red Cross and that was my day job. Mm-hmm. And I had to wear a tie. Remember, I had to wear a tie. And one day someone goes, yo, I want to give you a feature, man. I think you're ready. I'm going to give you a feature assignment. Mm-hmm. I said, bet, who is it? It's Mobb Deep. And I was like, all right, bet.
Oh,
cool.
Man.
So let me go hang out. Yeah. So let me go hang out with Mobb Deep at Battery Studios after I get out of work. I remember I showed up to the studio, and they all there with their crew, whatever. And I walk in with this fucking tie. And I was like, nah, man, this ain't gonna work. So I was like, pardon me 1 second, fellas. So I dip into the bathroom, take the tie off, throw the Uptowns on, you know. And then Uptowns, by the way, I don't know if it's a New York thing, but Uptowns are Air Force Ones. They're ones. Y'all know that. Come on. And so I go and kick it with them, and you know, there was a brother there named Sean C, right? Mm-hmm. Sean Kane, that's my man, 50 grand, but I had just met him. Mm-hmm. Sean was an assistant A&R at Loud Records. Right?
Wow. Oh,
an assistant A&R at Loud Records. And he, I know, we're going back, right?
Yeah.
And he goes to me, you know, we're like on the side as I'm waiting to do the interview with Havoc or Prodigy, whichever one. Mm-hmm. And we start catching up with, you know, getting to know each other. And I'm telling him, hi, I just got out of prison, you know, a few months back. I was, oh, that's crazy, blah, blah. He knows a couple of my dudes and vice versa. And then I say to him, so what do you do, like, besides this? And he goes, I got this job with the housing authority in New York. You know, there's a lot of projects in New York. So housing. I got a job with housing, man, doing maintenance. Mm-hmm. But I just, quit that last week. I said, why'd you quit? Mm. Yo, man, that's not me, man. That's not my life, man. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not what I want to do, man. Music is my life. Mm-hmm. And I want to really pursue this A&R thing, man. Mm-hmm. I don't know, Lito, man. I just feel like sometimes you have to burn a bridge in order to prevent yourself from going backwards, right? Yeah. And I was like, yo. And the next day, I went to the Red Cross, and right there, typed up a letter of resignation.
He did it on their premises and shit.
Wait. Did you have some money saved?
Nah, real talk, nah.
He was like,
nah.
I'm out.
nah, I did not. You know what? Man. And we could delve into this side of the conversation later on, but, you know, like, I went to prison for hustling, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm very good at that. Like, mm-hmm. I know what I'm doing when it comes to that. Mm-hmm. So when I got out, Anytime the struggle became really real, I'd be lying to y'all if I didn't have that as an option. Like, in my mental list of like, okay, I'm not going to get myself out this jam.
Right.
So what I've tried to do since then, knock on wood, is just create more options. You know what I'm saying? Like create more resources so that
so it's not an easy way to go
at the bottom of the list. Right. You know what I mean? Like, I got a lot of branches to hit before I get to even considering that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to front and say I haven't come close. You know, it's been times where I'm like, yo, man, this is not it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for example, I have a brother, you know, thankfully he's good now. But I have a brother who, it's weird. It's like I had spent 5 years in Philly. He stayed in New York. Mm-hmm. So for 5 years, we are more or less separated, just keeping in touch here, there. While I was then I go to prison. While I was in prison, he became a huge drug dealer. Like, he was just murdering the game. Mm-hmm. Not literally murder.
Just a drug dealer. Metaphorical speaking. Metaphors, people.
Yeah, so he was doing his thing out of state, like we say in New York, he was doing his thing out of state, OT. Mm-hmm. And then when I got out, you know, I'm kind of like chasing my dream. I'm in my little bit of struggle here, there, trying to keep the money flowing without going back to that. But I'm in college, and I'm like, you know, I went back to college to kind of like learn how to learn. So I'm like, you know, doing my thing, okay. But whenever the struggle would get real, he would come around and be like, yo, come on, let me take you shopping. Let me do this. Let me do that. Mm-hmm. And one day he looked at me and was like, yo, little bro, like, listen. Or you know, Dominican speak. Oye, manito. Esto lo que es. And he would be like, look, man. You can come with me to so-and-so state right now, and I could just hit you off with like 10 stacks a week just for holding me down. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just to do nothing but hold me down. Mm-hmm. And that's relatively easy money.
Right.
Because, you know, as boring as it sounds, the game doesn't have to be what you see on TV. Like, it's not 80 dudes with machine guns coming to do a deal with the pop the trunk.
You got to keep it low profile.
Caliber and briefcase. Right. It ain't that bullshit. Right. No. Going to a McDonald's, what's good, cuz? Here's the keys. Holler at you later. It's boring. It's boring TV, right?
So it
would have been easy money. And then he looked at me and was like, but I can't do that to you, man, because if anything happens to you, I'm going to fail. And I was like, well, I don't want to do that either.
Right.
Nine months after I get out, he gets bagged. So now he went to do 5 years. So it was like almost 10 years that me and my brother didn't really get to like interact. You know?
Right.
Anyway, I bring that up because working on Empire with a character like Cookie Lion, who did 17 years, right? And just like my own life and my friends' lives, like one of the things they tell you when you get out and you're on supervised release for the feds or you're on parole for the state, you're not allowed to associate with known felons. You're not allowed to do none of that, right?
Yeah.
But here's the deal, though. if you haven't been to prison or any kind of like environment like that, oddly enough, to an extent, military vets who've seen combat, it's somewhat similar because you develop a PTSD. I didn't know that until, you know, like recently.
Right.
And I've been home a while. Like, I didn't know that there was a PTSD involved. Simple shit, like if you want, like if I'm fresh out and you and I are talking and somebody walks behind me with like jingling keys, just jingling their fucking car keys, like I'm turning around because I'm thinking there's a CO behind me, like little shit like that. Like to this day, I have a hard time eating at like buffets where you got to hold a fucking tray and like that shit is like, fuck that. You know what I mean? Because this institution, you know, like this institutionalization of like, you know?
Yeah.
So the thing that I learned, and I had to keep it on the low, is the only people that could understand where I was coming from mentally, even though I wasn't self-aware enough to go, damn, I'm fucked up here. Even though I didn't understand it, I knew something was off because, case in point, 3 weeks out, I went to a party. Matter of fact, I remember this. It was still at the Palladium, when the Palladium was still there in New York. Now it's like housing for NYU, right?
Palladium.
I know, it's crazy.
Wow.
I went to a party, and it was like the performance after party for the premiere of The Show. You remember the documentary, The Show?
Yeah.
Russell Simmons had done?
Yeah.
So it was the after... I'm dating myself again.
I was 8 years old.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was 8 years old, and they snuck me in. So I went to the party for that screening, and it was a great time. I was with my boy Tramp. You know, he's like one of my best friends. I'll tell you a short story about him later. Sure. But like, I'm there and I'm feeling great, and I'm out maybe 3 months, maybe a month. I wasn't out long at all, and I should have been feeling great.
Mm-hmm.
And the crowd, I remember Channel Live at the time was performing. And they were performing with KRS-One. And the crowd is doing this with the hands. Throw your hands in the air. And everybody feeling good. And I should have been feeling great. And I could not help thinking, like, my eyes got really watery.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't help thinking that, now I'm kind of bugging out, fucking remembering this. But I couldn't help thinking, like, I felt like I left a bunch of my friends back in prison, like in a burning building.
A little guilt.
Survivor's guilt. I learned later on is that.
Right.
And to me, it felt like, damn, man, I don't deserve to be here. That's fucked up. Like, you know, they should be here with me, some of my friends. And so nobody could understand that but people who have been in prison. And to this day, like some of my closest friends are people that I met in prison. But here's the thing, though. None of them were knuckleheads. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, we made sure we were there for each other. Like, if the struggle got crazy for you, yo, man, before you do something stupid, here's a couple $100. Let's figure this out, man.
Right.
I don't need you back in there.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. Or, like, when I got to the source and started, like, my little climb, yo, as much as I could. Like, even doing this, like, I would even say, for example, I know the struggle is not going so well for you, but you're not a writer. Fuck that. Here's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna get one of these little intern dudes who we don't pay separate for shit like that. One of these little assistants, do this little interview with rapper so and so, or write this review, or I do it myself and fucking cut the check to you. So here's a little $300 in your pocket.
Right.
All of a sudden, your name is in the source.
Right.
One of my brothers, you know, Elohim Tucker. Shout out, Big Dog. The lock is open. You already know how we do. He and I were locked up together, and we started like this kind of motto of like saying the lock is open. So like when you're in the feds, you have a locker. You keep your combination. You don't want anybody running up in your shit. But he and I, we gave each other our combination. You ever hungry? Go in there, get a ramen, get a tuna sleeve, do your thing. It's all good. The lock is open for you, kid. And that became our thing to this day. Yeah. I'm godfather to his son. He is to mine. Like, that's my brother, right?
Right.
When he got out a few months after me, like, we're not supposed to associate. But had I not kept him in my circle, I don't know what the fuck would have happened. You know what I mean? Because he got it. He understood it. Anyway, I'm saying all that to say that, you know, when I got to the source with Selwyn and he told me to do the Mobb Deep thing, and then I met Sean and he goes, yo, sometimes you got to burn the bridge. Like, from that point is where I really never looked back. I went to the Red Cross, resigned, and they were cool about it because I would always talk about like writing and creativity, and I used to rap and I used to do this, and they were like, oh. So when I turned in the letter, they were like, no, man, listen, it's all good. And then, you know, like, honestly, like, the rest is history. Like, after that, they hired me, like, staff writer. That made me reevaluate, do I stay in college and get out of here with a degree in English and then maybe get hired to do research for somebody? or some shit like that? Yeah. Or do I take a job at a national magazine with my name on a masthead every month?
Yeah. Which is what most people get their English degrees for anyway. You know what I'm saying? Right, like, I'm already there.
Exactly. So I did that. I rocked out at the Source for... I worked my way up for 3 years, and then I became editor in chief. You know,
wow!
And that was a lot of fun.
You know,
that
I'm geeking great. Out over here.
Yeah,
yeah, that was a lot of fun. That, you know, I don't believe in glory days being in my past because fuck that, I'm still relatively young, even though I started when I was 8 years old. so my glory days, I try to keep them in the present. Right. You know. But I had a lot of fun at the Source, man. I learned a lot. I hope I taught a lot. Mm-hmm. And but here's the thing, as it relates to, you know, screenwriting, my passion had always been TV and then film.
Yeah.
TV and film had always been my passion. So even when I was doing the Source, like I sold a show to MTV called Station Zero. It aired at Station Zero. We pitched it as Channel Zero, and they liked it. Obviously, they bought it. Excuse me. We pitched it as a weekly, but when they bought it, they were like, we want you to turn it into a daily strip.
What?
And wow. And I'll tell you this. It happened the same weekend. Like, I got promoted to music editor on a Friday, right? And music editor at the Source is pretty much, even though in terms of rank at the time, you weren't necessarily second in command, but you're the fucking music editor of a music magazine, so you got juice. Mm-hmm. You're like, you're that person.
Right. Yeah.
So I got promoted to music editor on a Friday, knowing we had this pitch meeting at MTV on Monday, and then they essentially bought the pitch in the room. So all of a sudden, and they wanted to strip it into a daily strip. Mm-hmm. So I went from a crazy workload at the Source to getting this TV show, and they wanted 20 episodes done, like written and starting production in 4 months. So we basically banged out 20 episodes in 4 months of a half an hour little sitcom-y like cartoon. Mm-hmm. That was my intro to TV. Mm-hmm. And I had always kind of been looking... What do they call it? The parachute? I had kind of been looking for my exit from the Source at a certain point.
Golden
so,
parachute.
Like, if I stick around. Yeah. So, my thing was, if I stick around at the Source, but the Source is not going to get into like scripted TV,
right. My
days are numbered.
Yeah.
Right.
So, I got to figure this out. And so,
but I love the fact that just in your journey, you seem to get to this point where you know it's time to go. And some people
and
some people get in his position and just get comfortable. Like, you know, I'm here. I'm going to stay here.
Because I'm sure you had a great salary.
Yeah,
you
were like, invited to all the parties. You were, music.
You know, and you know who we call those people? Creative development people.
Well, you know what? And by the way, thank you for jumping in with that question, because otherwise I'd have kept going.
High
on coffee right now.
This is one of them shows. We'll go for 2 hours.
It's like you just know. It's like, you know, there's something that creative push... Something in you is like intuitively moving you to your spaces where you're supposed to be.
Well, you know, like I had started telling you guys that I had been creative since I was little. Sure. So I was always drawing. I was always writing. Then when I started MCing, I think I was like 13. So I couldn't go to a party and not get on the mic. Right. So now when I'm working at the Source, I'm like, damn, am I going to keep rapping? Because like, are these MCs going to really be okay with the fact that an MC is reviewing them? They're going to be like, oh, nigga, you hating. You can't you can't just like not like my record because you want to. So this was a real decision for me. You know, I spoke to like my inner circle of friends, my man Riv, my boy Tramp again, like, yo, fellas, I don't know what to do. Oh, you could do both, you know, and so it was a struggle for me. And then being at the Source 6 years and not writing songs, not doing music, that was a very real thing for me.
Like, that's a long time.
Like to this day, to this day, I can't listen to a hot beat, like a sick ass fucking beat, and in my head, I'm already writing. I was never really good at freestyling. Understood. I never really practiced but I can't hear it. In my head, I'm already like, oh my God, I will murder this beat. 40-something years old, like I still get that fire.
Yeah, I got 16.
Yeah. So being there 6 years, to me, felt like, okay, here you go. When I made the decision, you know, it was a confluence of events. And I could sum it up by telling you that I made my decision right around September 11th.
Wow.
Real talk. 9/11 happened, and
you were there. You were still in New York.
I was in New York, absolutely. Yeah. So 9/11 happened, and at that point, I wasn't super thrilled at being at the Source anymore. Like, I love coming to work. I love my staff. The shit was fun. I'm on TV every other fucking day.
Stifled.
Yeah. Rapper so and so gets arrested. Carlito, can you blah blah blah?
Right.
I'm doing all kinds of the fun, you know, the velvet ropey fun shit. Right. Mm-hmm. I'm doing all of that. But I don't know. Like, I kept thinking about, like, I know it sounds hokey and overly romantic, but I couldn't stop thinking about how many fucking people went to work, for example, at Cancer Fitzgerald, at one of those offices, hating their job that
That's morning. Right.
Like, yo, I hate this fucking job. I should have been an ice skater. I should have been this. I should have been that.
That's right.
And then they saw that plane coming to that window and were like, oh, shit. And that was it for me. Real talk. Like, I was like, I ain't doing this shit no more. And I told the owner, Dave Mays, told him, like, yo, kid, I'm out. And Ray Benzino was his partner, and that you know, my man. And I was like, yo.
Did you give him 2 weeks? You just said
No. I didn't want to do that to them because it's a really challenging position, and then you got to bring somebody in who can really handle it. Like you can't really be on some, you know, the source to us. I'm sure you guys can relate, and maybe even concur. Like it's a generational institution for us, man. Like that shit is a, you know, like like I'm a little bit sad at what's happened to it since then.
I still have my old copies from the old day when it first came out. You know what I'm saying? Man.
Like it was a real thing for us, you know. And so I didn't want to just be out. Like that's not my style. I feel like I really put my stamp on that. So I wanted to make sure. So what I did was, because you know I'm a Scorpio, so I got to be overly dramatic. So I was like, all right, so listen, so we got the 150th issue coming in about 6 months. That's gonna be my exit. I want to go out.
Yeah, okay.
like I want to go out with a boom. So I was working towards my exit, and the original plan was to like stay on as a consultant for just Source Entertainment. Period.
Right.
The magazine, the TV show, the blah blah blah, the any other stuff they wanted to do, and we rocked for like another 6 months. I was a consultant 9 months. It didn't work out. Those are still my peoples. They went their way. I went mine.
Right.
But, so the analogy that I kept thinking about during the 9/11 thing was ever since I was a little kid, I've been in the parade. Like, to me, hip hop and creativity, like, that's the parade. Like, like that's the actual, right?
Right.
Ever since I was a kid, I was in the parade. And when I got to the source, so there's three kinds of people involved in a parade, really four. There's the people who march in it,
right?
There's the people who watch it go by on the sidelines, and there's the people who clean up the elephant shit afterwards. and then you got the people that put the whole shit together. And I felt like all this time being at the source, I'm cleaning up elephant shit. All due respect to this rapper or that rapper, but like the story started getting really boring to me. Everybody had the same shit to say.
It's repetition.
Yo, shit was struggle. You know, I just wanted to rap because I had no choice.
On that grind.
And
yes,
all of that, I had no choice shit. Just, you know, I can't fuck with that.
Yeah.
You know? And so I felt like, so I used to write raps. I used to tell stories. I used to do murals. So I had a story to tell. And for the last 6 years, I have not been telling my story or the stories of like my peoples around me. I've been helping other people tell their story. And I was like, all right, I'm done. Fuck all that. Let me get back into the parade.
Right.
And that's it. And it has been, you pointed out, Hilliard, earlier that, yo, you must have been getting good money. Yes, brother, I was. It was a hell of a fucking six-figure salary.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm on TV every other day.
Where my 10%?
Yo, it was.
Where's my 1%? Forget the 10%.
Where my pimp fees at?
Listen, man, it was sweet. It was a great life. And my family thought I was insane.
Hey, your family's all,
are you crazy? Yes. And I'm like, and
come to family cook, and they just look at you like,
And I could safely say that you know, I could have been a little bit more strategic. Sometimes a little bit more ruthless, you know. So it's been a roller coaster, but the last 3 years, you know what? It's all good. I can keep trying to turn back the clock and be like, damn, I wish I never would have.
I'm
exactly where I belong.
That's
so
right.
It's all good.
That's right.
Think about this, Carlito. I mean, think about how many editorials you've written over all those years. You know, it's almost like, how many scripts have you written it's the same thing. You know what I mean? Exactly. It's slightly different, not a voice, but it's a slightly different way of using your writing, but it's still the same.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? It's still the same. Like you do that. You know what I mean? You write those articles all the time.
Different venues and different things that you're still writing. You're still doing your thing.
Yeah.
You're still flexing. Out there.
And you got to be concise.
Right.
So just working that, by the time you got the scripts, I bet your scripts are clean.
I try, man. I really try. I know when I first started, you know, sometime in the late like 90s, I remember I was working on this one project, and it was basically like a Hill Street Blues or like a NYPD Blue, but Rikers Island.
Okay.
Like just like the daily lives of the COs. Mm-hmm. One of my brothers was a CO. He retired on Rikers Island, and I had just come home from prison, so it's a different environment for me because I came out of the feds, but he's dealing with a big ass city jail.
Right.
And he was telling me some of the stories that would just have me dying every night. Like, damn, Lou, and you know, one day I go, you know what, man, I think I'm gonna do that, and I put together this little Bible, had the beats for the pilot. This is in the '90s. And I have no idea how to pitch this, but fuck it, we're gonna figure this out.
Right.
And I'm on the subway and I start seeing ads for Oz, HBO, and I was like, "What's Oz?"
You're like, "Damn it!"
Did you hear about Did you hear about Prison Town?
And then when it came out, I was like, "Oh, this is mad hyperbole. This is fake. Blah blah blah." But who gives a shit? It was entertaining ass, big ass drama, a la Empire.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, so I was trying to take a little bit of what I was learning in journalism and apply it to screenwriting. But I, you know, like all of us, my first scripts were wordy as hell.
Yo,
five pages.
Oh, well,
and everything. Exactly. And then he puts his hand on the knob and turns it slowly. Nobody went here all that.
Right.
Nobody wants to hear that.
Describe the outfit.
I know, the outfit. He has on boots with a, nobody cares. Nobody cares.
I was describing the smoke curling from the lip and the cigarette.
He went to Home Depot and bought red number 38, and then he took it to the. Nobody gives
a page 30, and nothing happened yet.
I don't know. Did you hear about Prison Town with Dennis Haysbert? Did you hear about that? They didn't pick it up.
Is that a new show?
It was a show that they did. It was interesting because it was about how a private jail comes to this town because the town becomes the jail.
That's Brillstein right there. Okay. They need to do that. That's crazy.
That becomes the town. Everybody in the town works at the jail.
Exactly.
And that the warden's actually like the mayor because he runs the town.
I didn't hear about that. How long ago was that?
This like they just tried to sell it this year.
Yeah,
this past year.
That's crazy. See, that's of its time. Seriously, for example, I was in the feds, right? So at various spots, some of these prisons in the 90s were brand spanking new, right? And then one of the jokes that we would have amongst ourselves was like, so they're building these towns like in Western PA, West Virginia, like different places like that, where you know, real talk, none of these white dudes out there had ever been exposed to people of color.
No.
You know, hardly any black people, African Americans, definitely no Latinos. Yeah. And if they were Latino, they were Mexican off the top.
That's right.
So we would go to these places, and like the joke for us would be like, you know, the fucking coal miners are coming. Because to us, COs were all coal miners. You know, and so you would have that tension because a lot of them just never been exposed to like what we about, you know. But I think that's of its time. So Orange is the New Black, right? I don't watch it much, but that's a private prison, is it not?
I think it is a private prison.
I could have sworn it was a private prison. And I'm like, that's dope because they're making a statement about it without the show being a
statement
about that.
That's right. But you can bring those characters in to talk about that. I want
to
ask you about something that you continually, you've got so much to talk about. It could be a show on its own. But you're talking about
this is therapy, by the way.
No.
If shit is recurring, it's because I'm working.
But you know what? I like that you said that because now let's just be real about this. People are enamored with the fact that you were incarcerated. Mm-hmm. They're enamored with he's hardcore. He's he's from New York. He's hardcore. Whatever. He's in. But when you talk about and you're kind of going
Luch
over
is in
it,
prison right now. Ooh.
but the internally how you felt. Internally, how you people don't understand that PTSD. They don't understand how you have to dig into that. They don't understand how you're trying to live your life, and you're just like stuff you don't understand what's affecting you about your life and about that experience coming in. And people just gloss over that because they don't understand as you deal into that. And thank God, I wish more people of color would do therapy, but they don't. Right. They'd rather have diabetes and hypertension about it. But anyway,
go to the pastor who's
there. I'll go. You know what? I had to tell somebody last week. I know you think Jesus got an office on Crenshaw, but he don't. use the tools that he's given you and go to the therapist. He don't got an office on Crenshaw because how's that working out for you with your husband still beating your ass?
All right,
get some practical shit up in your piece. But the fact that's a big, like you can get swallowed up by that by the adoration that people have for that, as opposed to you.
I gotta really work this out
for myself. Right. I gotta dig down for myself, and you have the outlet of writing to dig down and do that and be therapeutic. I know the children of Tendu.
Tendu, yeah.
He talks about that. He talks about how
get you a fucking therapist and
don't take this home to your partner or whoever you got, because they just can't handle all the stuff. So what you're saying is, you know, especially with creative people, I think they have PTSD too, because you got to walk in and be told your shit is shitty.
Shitty, shitty, bang, bang.
We just did a podcast about self-validation.
Oh, yeah. I was listening to that.
And you got to have that. You got to have that within yourself. And the strength that I think that you're kind of passing over, I wish we could really get into that, but the strength that you're passing over, the journey you had to get to where you are in the mindset and how life is fluid and you're always learning. I think, like, you know, when you're saying, like, fuck this, I don't need this. It's like, you know, that was a thing you might not have articulated, like, I'm learning about life. But people don't. They stay stagnated, but life is always fluid, and you got to grab that lesson while you're learning it. And I think it's such a big part of what you're saying without articulating that, and I think people need to know that.
Right. Well, thank you, man. I mean, so, for me, So I gave you guys, I'm fucking running my mouth, but it's broad strokes, right?
We're just having a conversation.
I appreciate that, right? So it's broad strokes. So the whole thing with prison, right? I was telling you guys that I was always creative. I was never a knucklehead, right? I don't get into the whole street cred shit. I'm not a gangster. I never was a gangster. That just was not my thing. I started off by saying you grow up in a certain environment and you expect it to hold your own. Like, my parents were not fucking around. What? Somebody smacked you in school? I'm taking your ass down to school tomorrow. And you're going to whoop
him out, fucking you up when
you get back.
Right.
It was my mom's, a hard-ass Dominican woman. Nobody, you better, if they look like they're going to hit you, you bust them open. Right? My father, the same thing. My two big brothers, the same thing. So, you know, it's like around that. My sister, Shorty, Elodie, I love you. You already know. We close in age, like a year and a half. Even she was the same way. A year and a half older than me. Come on, we're going to go to school and we're going to put the beats on this dude, or we're going to rush his ass. A chick. Right? So you grow up in that certain environment. But that doesn't mean like, to me, it's this kind of weird fucking acceptance of social deviance kind of thing, right?
Right.
Where it ain't like my parents are giving me guns. They weren't idiots.
Right.
But one day, me and my sister in the house, we were teenagers, my mom's was already dead. We're in the house chilling, watching TV. And my father strolls in, fucking whistling a happy tune, and goes in his drawer and pulls out a .357. I didn't even know this shit was in there. And I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And he loads it, puts it in his belt, and we're like, Pop, what the fuck? Nah, your older brother got into some words with this fucking dude, this white boy. He thinks he's tough. I'm going to go over there and make sure he's straight. And we're like, wait a fucking minute. So you grow up around that and it becomes your normal.
That's right. Absolutely. That's right.
Right.
I wasn't looking at it like, you know, so we just shrugged our shoulders. Like, all right, cool. We expect everything to be all right. What the fuck? Like, I wouldn't do that now.
Right.
I was 13 years old going in subway tunnels in New York City. Like, subway tunnels with, oh, here comes the train, y'all. And you duck to the side, you duck in, so the train doesn't hit you. Well, I catch my son is 18, and I catch his ass in a subway tunnel, and I'm going to put it on. You see what I'm saying?
So,
you know, so the whole thing with the street cred and this and that, the other, listen, again, I was rapping. I did shows in Miami at 15. They used to let me into the adult clubs because, you know, I was okay with the MCing. In Philly, I did a few shows. Like I was always doing my thing, you know? With the graffiti, I had a little reputation in that world. So I was always creative. You know what I mean? Like, I had plans. My boy Tramp, who I mentioned earlier, he and I met senior year of high school. He went to a Catholic school. I went to this gutter-ass high school just to finish. And that was my boy, right? Tramp was this white dude, or is this white dude, who was just like a fucking pioneer. Like, he would just be adventurous. Yo, there's a party in West Philly, blah, 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 blah. And some of the other fellas would be like, man, I ain't going to West Philly. Because, like, our neighborhood was, like, mixed Latino and black. Really Puerto Rican. I was, like, one of the few Dominicans there. So, like, mixed, like, Puerto Rican and black, but mainly more Puerto Rican in North Philly, Hunting Park, North Philly. party in West Philly, y'all. Let's go. And this is the white dude. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't like a wigger. He wasn't like this dude that was like, yo, what up, right, son? He was just a regular sounding. Right. But he was just real hip. Had crazy flavor. Used to dance. Used to do art and graffiti. Mm-hmm. What's up, y'all? Y'all want to go? And nobody would go. And I'd be like, fuck that. Let's go. Because I'm into hip hop. Like, I want to just be like a cultural kind of like ambassador. So that was Tramp. So when I got into the hustle game, I did it. And again, this sounds really woe is me, like a rapper or some shit. Honestly, y'all, like, that had never been my thing. Like, there was no real need for it. My little girl was about to be born. Times were real tough. I had just lost my financial aid. I was going to Temple University. I had just lost my financial aid. I was in the Army. I got a medical discharge. I was trying to go back through the ROTC program. So once I lost financial aid, I couldn't keep going to college. And, like, put it to you like this. Like, shit was bad. So basically, we were eating... My girlfriend was staying with me. We were eating, I was eating fucking Wick cereal for like 3 months. That sounds like an exaggeration, but I'm not exaggerating. It was like that, right? Every now and then, I scrape up a couple dollars doing some artwork, a t-shirt, a jacket design for somebody, a couple $100. I buy her a cheesesteak, and I would send her to her parents' house every evening. Go to your parents' house and eat. You should come with me so you can eat. I was mortified by that shit. I'm not doing that. That's crazy embarrassing. Like, you pregnant? Like, I'm not that guy. Just go, right? My boy Hayes... who me, him, and Tramp are the ones that started the comic strip in the Source a couple years later. My boy Hayes was working in a bakery, right? This bakery in Logan, which is right next to kind of like Only, juxtaposed to Hunting Park in Philly, right? North Philly, Logan, right? Working at a bakery. Hayes is a Puerto Rican dude. Hayes, every other night, would come back to my crib with day-old bagels. Yo, we about to throw these away, man. Here you go, get something to eat. I'm getting fucking choked up talking about this, but this shit was real.
That's right.
And then one day, one of my dudes, man, my fucking brother to this day, Baby 137, you know, well-known graffiti writer from New York who had moved to Philly as well. At the time, in the late 70s, mid-80s, it was this exodus of, like, New York people moving to Philly thinking it was a better place.
We gonna make it better.
Yo, man.
And if you've ever been to Philly, aside from Center City.
Yo, listen, I know I keep hitting y'all with the sideboards, but my first day in high school in Philly, you know, I got the New York attitude. I'm this dude. I didn't have gym equipment. It was my first day in, They put us in
niggas that be going to the gym.
Yo,
I ain't putting on no shorts.
Yo, they put us in a fucking cage. And locked the door. Like literally like a bullpen, like when you in jail. So it's just a bunch of teenage boys there, and I'm sitting there all mad at the world, like fucking Philly, man. This place, man, it's one horse town. Cause I'm from New York, it's a big city. Man, I don't know what's up. These dudes are probably all lame out here. Next to me was this Puerto Rican dude and a black dude. And one of them is regaling the other with a story of a fucking shootout he got in the day before. Yo, kid. Not kid, because they don't talk like that over there. But like, yo, man. So I jump out the car, and the boy, that's how they say in Philly. The boy pulled a joint out on me and started dumping. I pulled out my joint. Bing, 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 bing. I hit this motherfucker like five times. And I was like, yo, I'm in high school. So I was like, okay. So,
and this is gym time.
I'm like, okay, so this is Philadelphia. This is where I'm at, you know? So like I said, so when my man Baby came to me one day and goes, yo, listen, man, I know you kind of going through the struggle a little bit. I know times is tough. He was having a baby at the same time. We all young dudes, 19, 20, having kids. That shit was like, I think that Generation X is that demarcation line of half my friends were all having kids at 19, 20, and it wasn't a big deal. Oh, you having a baby? Dope. No big deal. We're going to throw the shower. We're going to have fun. And the other half of my friends were seeing the future and going, you're out of your fucking mind. like one of my dudes from back then,
your life is over.
Okay. Yo, he didn't have a kid until like 38. So we were all looking at him like, damn, yo, you did it. And he's like, now I'm ready to have a kid. So my man Baby basically goes to me and says, yo, do you want to make a little extra bread? You know, because I know you trying to stay clean. You're not trying to fuck with none of this. Jump into this thing with me, blah, blah, blah. I'm holding this spot down over here. I don't want to give away too many details, you know, it's whatever. But I remember that first day, here you go. This should have been a fucking sign. But, you know, apparently I like the drama so I can tell some stories. So he gives me this package. He goes, you know, take this over here to so-and-so address, right? So I walk to this spot. You know, Philly has a lot of like row houses and whatnot. So I get to this spot. And they got steps leading up to the entrance, but where I was going was the basement apartment, which was ground level. So there's a hedge separating the steps from the ground level basement. So I go to the basement, I'm knocking on the door, and as I'm waiting, I hear two voices on the porch right above me. and they're kind of whispering loud. It's broad daylight. It's no big thing. This is like when the drug game was like open air markets out there. Mm-hmm. And these two dudes are talking. I remember a black dude, Puerto Rican dude. And they're talking, and I hear a Puerto Rican dude go, "All right, so it is, man. You know, a couple ounces of it." And then the black dude goes, all right, good looking, you know, or thanks. All right, that's what's up. And then all I heard was, "Yeah, nigga, you know what it is." And the Puerto Rican boy goes, "Oh, word, motherfucker. That's how you going to do me? Be easy. You know what it is, cuz. You know what it is." And I'm like, "What the fuck?" And I can't see because of the hedge. And when I peeked down, apparently the black dude came down. This dude is holding a 38 on the Puerto Rican boy on the porch. Wow. And then he sees me and jerked the gun towards me. And I'm like, "Yo, I got shit to do with that kid. I had a half a brick in my backpack."
Wow.
This dude is robbing this cat for a couple ounces. If he'd have known what I had in that
backpack. Why is this like the movie Dope? I feel like I'm reliving Dope all over again.
I had a half a brick in my joint, and I'm like, if this motherfucker knew what I got in this bag right now, it is finito for me. And he was like, "Just chill, yo, chill." And I'm like, "None of my business, homie." And I just put my head down and was like, "Wow, close call." That was my first day in the game. And I went home that night like...
I don't know, man.
Yeah, I'll be back tomorrow.
Yeah. Anyway, so I did that shit for like 6 months, 9 months. You know, I didn't want to be the dude on the corner. I basically was like, you know, let me count money for y'all. Like, let me just organize this whole shit, right? Mm-hmm. I remember that one day I was sitting with Tramp, who never got into the game. He stayed creative. I'm still doing creative shit with him, doing T-shirts. We're doing jackets. We're doing murals. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm still making my like my bones like that. And I was talking to him because I had just met this Colombian cat, right? Colombian dude who was crazy connected with like a direct pipeline, whatever. And mind you, at this point, I have no aspirations to be a drug dealer. I'm just like making my little, it wasn't even a lot of money. I'm embarrassed to say how much I was making. Mm-hmm. But I'm not bullshitting when I tell y'all I was paying my bills. That's it. Mm-hmm. Paying my bills. I'm not buying jewelry. I'm not buying a flashy car because I didn't get into it for that.
Right.
I got into it because I got tired of giving my girl fucking wick and eating bagels, right?
Right.
And now we can go to the movies anytime we want to. Now we got the baby coming, so I can buy a crib and all that fly shit. And I remember I was talking to Tramp. It was like summertime, like May, June. And I'm all gassed up because I'm talking about this Colombian dude. "Yo, Tramp is going to be crazy. Like, this dude got the direct line. I can get work straight from him. Cakes straight up. Probably going to give him to me for X amount of money. I'm about to blow up." And Tramp, my fucking boy, looked at me and was like, "Hold on a second, man. Hold the fuck on a second. So that's it then? So all this shit we've been doing and all you want to be is a fucking drug dealer? Yo, fuck you, see?" Really? And walked away from me. And I was like, "Wow. Yo, fuck you, man. You don't know my life. You don't know my struggle. You don't know." You know, right. I got into that "woe is me" bullshit, right? Not looking at the bigger picture.
Right.
And to this day, I still call that time in my life the stupid stage for me, because I might have read a couple books here and there. Like, I would be the dude on the corner reading a fucking novel, right? And the other dudes would be like, "Come on, you with your fucking books." No bullshit. Like, come on with the fucking books. But then when they need questions answered, "Yo, Lito,
how you smart, spell dog?
You smart, you know this, right?" So me and Tramp didn't talk for like 2-3 days. And then I really fucking thought about it.
Wow.
And this was a time in Philadelphia, man, where no lie, like every weekend we would go out. And every single weekend or every other weekend, I was saying this to my girlfriend. Leah Benavidez, y'all. She's an ill fucking writer. I need to not stop playing.
I just want to say something
for the crowd.
Yeah, say.
I'm enjoying this conversation.
Look, I was thinking about it. Trip this.
I never told her none of this, by the way.
But see, look,
I've been acting like I got a fucking USC degree in film.
Hold on. But see, here's the trick, Carlito. I was tripping on. Because I'm one of those people, I'm always like observing everything. It's just what I do. I study people. And I've been tripping off on her body language going, "How much of this story does she know?"
Yeah, she's really, we're
like, she learning like, and while we learning some shit.
Am I going to have to shoot this motherfucker?
She's tired. Nah, it's good.
She's probably like Michael Corleone.
Not at all.
You being real, dude. I appreciate that. You being real. I appreciate it. That's what's up.
So, I didn't speak to Tramp for like 3 days, and then this was a time in Philly where we would go out every weekend, and it was wild, man. It was like every weekend oh, there's a party here. Like, you just know in your brain, well, it's going to end up in a brawl. We're going to get into a fight. Mm-hmm. Or somebody's going to get popped. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my peoples, man, a lot of my peoples got laid down. Mm-hmm. A lot of dudes died. A lot of fucking people died. It was like every other weekend was a funeral. I'm not even exaggerating. Mm-hmm. Like, every other weekend, somebody's dead. This one's banged out. This one got 30 years. It was just insane. And I don't know. Like, I was, real talk, I was looking at my little girl. You know, she was a few months old. I don't know, man. It sounds hokey. It sounded hokey to a couple of the cats that I said it to. I don't want to do this shit no more, man. She's going to kill us all. And I said to Tramp, yo, man, you right. I'm fucking up. Let's get our shit going.
Right.
And then the universe is awesome because, like, within a week or two, another one of my friends was working asbestos removal and, like, construction and shit like that. And at the time, that shit was paying, like, $25 an hour, which was more money that I was making hustling. Mm-hmm. So my first paycheck, I was like, yo, I just made like three times as much legally,
right,
benefits and shit,
right?
So then I started doing that, and I, you know, and then like a year and a half later, the Fed started these big ass sweeps and indictments and what have you, and one day I got a knock on the door because a couple cats that I used to run with couldn't fucking hold their weight.
Couldn't shut your mouth.
Yeah. So about 18 months after I got out the game, you know, they fucking came and found me.
Yo, see, hold on. I'll ask you a question. What, because it's difficult for people to separate that, you know, so your boy was like, you know, you tripping, whatever. Was it your boy that, but from him saying, you want to be a fucking drug dealer? What made you go after 3 days, I don't want to do this? Because that's the key. People are not strong enough to not fall into the street syndrome. You know what I'm saying? Do you know what made you go? No, this is not. Nah.
You mean like back then?
Well, he was saying his daughter. He was looking at his daughter.
Well, he was looking at, is that what made you say? But no, he still didn't have the strength within himself to say. Because people got daughters and children are like, I need to pay for them.
Yeah, it was a combination of shit. I mean, you know, I could give you the 2015 answer, hindsight 2020. Oh, right. Probably, you know, reading a couple of psychology.
Right.
But like back then, it was... you know, in all honesty, it was because like I always had a bigger plan.
Okay.
Like for example, like to make the decision to hustle, I sat down with my girlfriend and you know, like my mom's had just died a few years before that. Mm-hmm. And I had always been a honor roll student, you know what I mean? Like I was an egghead. That's why I call myself a closet nerd, because I was always getting A's and B's, good student. Mm-hmm. We love them, great. Blah, blah, blah. And I would get into trouble here, there, a fight here, there. And the teachers would be like, oh, my God, I'm so surprised at you. And I would be like, you have no idea the fucking shit that lurks in my heart here.
Right,
you know?
Right.
I don't know. Like, to me, like, there was no, for example, like, my mom's died. My pops is, you know, I love them. But it was, like, no big, giant pressure to finish high school. Mm-hmm. But in my brain, it was like, I got to finish fucking high school.
Right.
So when I made the decision to hustle, I was crying. Like, I was like, yo, what would my mom say? Mm-hmm. Like, what the fuck would she say? Like, she came to this country. My mother used to fucking get up at 5 in the morning. That's going to have me crying here. My mom used to get up at 5 in the morning to go work in a fucking factory sewing, to get home by 7 to cook for me and my sister and my brother.
Right.
To fucking finish cooking, smoke a little cigarette, you know, and then get... You have the sewing machine in the kitchen and keep fucking sewing to 10, 11 o'clock at night to do that shit 6 days a fucking week. Mm-hmm. And then on Sundays, she's blasting the fucking music, waking us up, cleaning the house to then sew from about four in the afternoon to 10 o'clock at night.
For a better life for her kids.
For a better life.
That's right.
Every now and then she would go out. She was killed in a car crash on the way out to see my oldest sister's husband playing that night. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the rare Saturdays. I'm going to go out. Wow. She got killed in you know. So it was like a combination of things. You know what I mean? Like I don't know. Like to me, the hustling was like, okay, cool. So I'm making money. Mm-hmm. But like I sat down and said, so if my original intent was just to make money and kind of like pay the bills and whatever, then my other homie came with the parachute. Like, yo, I got the job, the asbestos joint. And I'm like, damn. And then a couple friends of mine, Puerto Rican cats, had gone off to college at like Howard, Cheney, Lincoln, and there was this big push at historically black colleges at the time to get in like more minorities.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like, to, weirdly enough, to diversify their student body to a certain point.
Right.
Hey, we need more Latinos. We need more this. We need more that. And my friends were getting full rides to like Lincoln, Cheney, Howard. Right. And I was like, what? So here I am, this dude, 20 years old with a little girl and like going through all kinds of shit while half my friends are off at college. I'm going to Howard to hang out on weekends. By the way, I'm meeting Diddy when he was at Howard, just promoting parties, just a regular cool-ass dude. He probably don't remember that, but it was like that cool-ass like environment where like the hip-hop industry was about to really explode in 6-7 years after.
Right.
So it was like that, you know what I'm saying, Kev? It was like that kind of thing that had me feeling like, damn, man, like that's not the bigger picture. Like, I got more things that I want to do, you know? At the time, it's kind of weird, right? But at the time, MCing was still a huge part of that. Like I was always writing songs, you know what I'm saying? And that was very much a part of the plan. You know, I'm going to get a show where I could get it and, you know, and catch a battle where I could catch it and do my thing. So that was still a big, just the creative life, you know, should have been taking precedence. And when 6 months went by and Tramp called me out on that, yo, I needed you to draw this thing. What happened? Nah, I was trying to do... Come on, man. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, after that point, I didn't want to sacrifice the creative for the thing. So when I got backed up, it was a hurt piece. I can't lie. Because it came out of nowhere. And I'm like, wait a minute. What? What? The feds got this thing? Conspiracy? What? So I don't have to get caught with anything? It's just two or more people saying, yeah, that's the guy that was with us. And so, you know, so I wound up doing 5 years for that.
Wow.
So while I was in there, my whole thing was, well, all right, well, you know, this is pretty fucked up, but I can't stop. So I kept reading, you know. Writer's Digest became like my little college education in writing.
Yeah. Wow. Shit,
yeah. Writer's Digest was my thing. The Source, you know, this is pre-internet, this is pre-hip-hop being on the radio in the daytime on a regular basis. So The Source was like my way to check in. And so by the time I came home, I had every intention of hitting the ground running. Like, I'm a rap. I'm going to still draw. And then when the idea to write, that professor was like, you should write. And it's been that, man.
So we got my man Carlito. He's going to take us out without the end title song. That's going to be my man Carlito giving us a little funky freestyle for us.
Can't call it a freestyle because I can't do that. And I haven't written a rap in a long ass time.
Just give us some bars.
I'll give you a little something. I can recall when I was small, just this tall. My pops would drop jewels with rules and fist balls. List all the good and bad about being a young dad. Feel glad about the fun his son had, cause games were made for the youth. He smiled while his child went wild when his first tooth, frustrated for a quarter. Sometimes he sweat and sort of give some thought about how to support a family of five, stay alive and thrive through all the struggle. He'd always stress not to trouble my life with a wife and child while a child still, cause ain't no thrills paying the bills, but I fill in the blanks and then give thanks for the lecture. Pops, you my man and you know I respect you, but I chose to start my own clan, a teenage rage and gaze like a grown man. I had a choice, but a voice spoke up when I erupted and told me don't interrupt it. The coitus and boy, this push came the shoving. Because of the loving, I put a bun in the oven. My girl was PREGNANT. Her figure was full, but the fridge was empty. I was forced to be a source of currency. Be the boss, pay the cost for her and me. I couldn't pay bills if skills I lacked. You see, slaving a factory, that shit was whacked to me. I did it my way and walked down a white brick highway. And every day was a Friday, a payday, because I stayed paid in my heyday. Packed to the gills with stacks of bills until the hard knocks of life's a hard knock on the front door. To put it blunt, all cops on the hunt for yours truly, because I was truly a mass in a mint. I couldn't take a hint, so I spent all the cheese I seized on not guilty pleas. I used to flip keys, now all I flip is the calendar.
Yeah.
I wrote that shit in 1991.
That's
what's up. Hold that.
I used to flip keys, now I flip calendars.
Peace, y'all.